This is the beginning of class 5.
Sashi Bhagi Jashime Tosham Rira Vinshi Nyende Yampadi Sange Shindu Mithe Uwahi Jogo Sangye Chadam Sangye Chodama Chanchu Badu Dagni Kyasu Chi Dagi Chunyen Dibhe Sanangki Drola Penche Sangye Chupasho Sangye Chodam Sangye Chodama Jubadu dami kasuchi Dagi chumyen dipe sunangi Jola penche sangye jubasho Sangye chudam soki chudama Jubadu dami Suchi Dahi Chunyen Kibbe Sanamki Yola Penche Sange Juhasho.
How to prepare, how to get ready before you do meditation. We said most people fail on that. You know, most people fail because they don't prepare for meditation. Everybody knows how to sit down and close their eyes, but it's the preparation that makes it either go well or go bad. So the first one was preparation. Second one was what? Well, I mean the whole syllabus, the whole structure.
Seven ingredients.
Like the environment of the whole place, right? Yeah. Meaning the whole place where you should meditate and how your friends should be, how the food should be, how your mindset should be, everything. The environment. Mostly physical environment. And the third thing was what? We finished it last time.
Posture.
And these were, the Buddha taught them like 2,500 years ago. They're very interesting. I mean, apparently they come up in everybody's mind sooner or later if you try to meditate. And it's good to know them. The book says it's good to know your enemy before you meet him. Okay? He will come. These five will come in your mind. Nyepanga. And then to fight them, you have Nyembo Ge. Nyembo means, we call it correction. Okay. Nyembo also means, like if you eat poison, if a snake bites you, you have to take the Nyembo. So it can mean antidote or counteraction. I like, in this case, since it's a problem, this is the correction. It's what step you should take to stop that problem where? In your mind.
Are there five?
Gate means eight.
Number?
Yeah, number eight. So you've got five problems and eight corrections. After that, which we're not going to do tonight, we'll have the nine mental states that you go through. So how you know where you are. You know, there's here. Because the faith in Western world means, you know, oh, I have faith in the God or something. It's not like that. Here, Depa means Dangwa. And Dangwa means to be attracted towards something because you see its good qualities. It's like admiration. It's like attraction. And that comes when you see the good qualities of something. Okay. It means you're attracted to it. You see something nice in it. Okay. What are the qualities of Tingenzin that you could be attracted to? I'll tell you, I mean, the main one I told you at the beginning. Why are we doing this course? There's five Buddhist paths. The last one is Buddhahood. The first one is getting sick of life. Okay? And the three between are what you have to go through to get to Buddhahood. Okay? Which are Dorlam, intellectual understanding of emptiness.
Once you see emptiness, then you have habituation. That means you're starting to, you know, to get rid of anger and all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But can
permanently.
But can you do this even before seeing emptiness?
No, because you cannot.
You can still see intellectually that anger causes.
You cannot. That's the whole reason you want to see emptiness directly, because there is no other method to remove anger permanently. You must see emptiness.
Yeah, but you start
directly.
What I'm saying is.
Oh, but before that, you must start.
Yeah, because you see
you
that
must,
and, you know, anger causes.
To have enough goodness to reach the lower path, you have to get rid of a lot of anger.
Right. Exactly.
But you can't destroy anger. There is
oh,
no
destroy,
method.
That's what you mean, destroy.
There's no method to remove anger permanently from
okay.
your mind
okay.
except seeing emptiness directly.
So
that's why people struggle with other paths. That's why they have so much problems. That's why they're so frustrated, because you can't. It takes that to remove anger from yourself permanently. And that's why it's so frustrating. So anyway, your ability to concentrate. You'll never develop it without shamatha. Okay. The other quality is if you care, and it's supposed to be not very important, if you get good at meditation, you can read other people's minds. You can do miracles. You can do that. It's not a goal. You know, it's no good if you can fly in the sky if you're still getting old and dying. Okay? It's not the main point. You can sit out in the snow. You can get heat. No, there are Buddhist masters who I've met who, you know, the big deal was that he had sat out in the snow for 5 hours or something. That's okay, but he still got old and died. He's already dead, actually. So it's not the goal. It's nice. It's a side effect. So these are all the qualities of, yeah.
I like the one word thing. What were the five one words of seeing, habituation?
Oh, okay.
In order, please.
Accumulation.
Accumulation. You can call it gathering if you don't like it. Accumulation is okay. Number two is preparation. Sometimes the word doesn't describe what's going on though. Preparation is where you intellectually start to understand it. Number three is called seeing, with your mind, right? Number four is habituation. And then number five is called no more learning, finished learning. And that's equivalent to nirvana. And if you want to know why, you have to go to the course next time. Yeah.
There's so many questions to ask, and some of my, for me personally, I sure might be silly. But, like, according to the posture, if you do a half lotus, does that interfere with the speed of your progress in these five things? Like, if you can't do a full lotus?
I think we said last time, the text said you could do either, and it, no problem.
No interference with anything.
Generally speaking, you have to use common sense in meditation. If you're struggling, and some people do, for many months, to attain a certain posture, and you're not meditating, that's a distraction. And we'll learn, we'll talk about it tonight. Okay? Right. So, Lelo, the first...
I'm sorry, you can read other people's minds?
Yeah.
Or you can
learn to read other people's minds. You can see the future. You can see what's happening in, in
the
little
universe.
Town in Mexico right now. Okay. So the first opponent, the first weapon you use against not wanting to meditate, did it ever happen to you? This week? Happened to me one day, I didn't get up. Okay. You just don't want to do it. You really don't want to do it. Why? Because you didn't understand what you're going to get out of it. You know, the reason you get up to go to work is because you get the paycheck every Friday or whatever. You know what you're going to get. But Lelo is very subtle. Lelo means you don't really feel like doing it. And that happens a lot. And I tell you this, on the days that you don't feel like doing it, that's when you especially have to force yourself, because that's when you make progress. The most progress is made on days that you really don't feel like doing it. If you force yourself to sit down and do it on those days, you'll be able to achieve shamatha. And if you don't, you never will. And Tsongkhapa says that in his text. You know, you have to, on the days that you don't feel like it, those are the crucial days. Those are the days when you make the most progress. Sitting down on those days is best progress. So that's the first antidote. Okay, you just understand why you need it. Some kind of admiration or some attraction to this idea of getting to samatha. You should be attracted to it. You should think, oh, that's really something wonderful. You should see its good qualities. Okay. Second thing, it's easy. Say Dumba. Write it first. Dumba means you want it. To want it. Be in some position where you don't have to do this thing. That's the only selling point you need, I think. You know, if you get tired of getting up at whatever time you're getting up, just think of the alternative. Right, Laura? Like, you know, 1,000 more lifetimes with the same boss, probably. Okay?
No, that's the choice. What is it concretely that you're examining good qualities of the
meditation itself.
But if you haven't experienced it, what are you, you're sort of, based on what you've read?
Right. Based on the Buddha saying, these are the good qualities of meditation. Based on that presentation that you have to be in meditation to, well, you have to be in meditation to see emptiness directly, and you already understand why you need to see emptiness directly. You've learned that already. You cannot see it unless you have this microscope, this ability to concentrate. Mm-hmm. You won't see it. You'll never be able to see it. If you never meditate more than that about suffering and its cause, those are nice. I can confirm those. I have experienced those. And no other person really took the time or cared or said anything about them. No one has described the problem so well. You know, for example, that the beginning of a relationship is the cause of its destruction. That's interesting. You know, that's the way it is. It does not need an external cause for it to turn lousy, or for it to end. The beginning of it is its destruction. The beginning of it is the cause of its destruction. That's a Buddhist theory. And if you live long enough, you start to say, oh yeah, that starts to make sense. Things like that. Okay. Number C. Okay, Tsundru. Tsundru means effort. It's also the name of the fourth perfection. Effort. Trying hard. Trying hard for what?
To meditate.
Okay. Like when I was a teenager, you see the lady, you like her, you see the good qualities, then you want it, and then you go. You try to get it. That's tsundru. Tsundru means you're working to get something. Effort. So this is again a result of number B, which was wanting it. First you see its good qualities, then you start to want it, and then you go after it. That's tsundru. Tsundru means to make effort.
Does the effort have to be joyous?
Like, well, in the perfection of effort, it's defined as joy. About doing something good, yeah, it will be joyous, but it's not the emphasis in this. This is just what's effort here, is to get up on the morning that you don't feel like it, and you'd like to skip the sweeping part, just sit down, didn't we? You know, it's really pretty clean. The students cleaned it last night. That's not tsundru, okay? You don't want it bad enough. And you won't get this unless you have want it. And you won't want it unless you understand why it's a good thing, why it's going to help you.
So A needs to be B.
That's the whole point. You must have A to get to B. You must have B to get to C. And C leads to...
D.
Right.
Until we're ready for the next class, watch it.
Say Xinjiang. I have translated as, I'm not sure I like the translation, but I have to explain it, okay? Some people you know, like in dieting or like in jogging or like in weightlifting or anything else you want to learn, it's much better if you can do half an hour a day and never break it. Never break it. If you could just get up and do it each day, you'll get it. And you really should do it the same time each day. And then your clock will go off in your mind. At that moment, you'll want to sit down and meditate. It's very powerful. It's very good. Same time every day, and it becomes like a habit. It becomes part of your life. And then you don't break it. You must not break it. They say specifically in the text, if you work hard for a couple of weeks and then you just lay off for a couple of days, it's very difficult. And you must do it continually. So Xinjiang, the first part is where you can make your body sit quietly for many hours, maybe 4, 5, 6 hours, if you want to. Your body will do it because it's so used to it. You know, you don't do it the first year. You work up to it. Okay. So first problem is what?
Laziness.
I almost don't like the word laziness. It's kind of like not wanting to do it. It's not wanting to meditate. If I say laziness, I don't think anybody in this room says, yeah, I'm really lazy. But if I say, did it happen this week that you didn't really want to get up and do it? Yeah, just about every day.
Procrastination.
It's kind of like procrastination. Kind of like that. There's another word for that. But it's like not really wanting to do it. Not feeling like it. Okay? And you get that. Why? Because you didn't see... If you really truly believed in what it could do for you, you would do it every morning. But you don't. So then you don't get to want it much. And because you don't want it much, you don't work hard to get it. And because you don't work hard, you don't get to that point where it's so pleasant that you want to do it.
But what about something else that is strong at the moment than the desire to do it?
Then contemplate that thing's impermanence. Never visually. And you just find that you've just forgot to do it. You know, like, suddenly you know, like, whoa, well, what was I doing, you know?
It's called.
It's just where the object slips away. You lose. Mentally, of course. Excuse me?
You mean not visually, you are visualizing.
Yeah, but I want to stress that you never meditate on a thing by staring at it with your eyeballs.
No, I'm talking about this.
Yeah, of course, if it's a picture you're visualizing, of course it's visualized.
So it's when it completely
confuses
it completely.
This happens a lot, and you know it if you try. By the way, Tsongkhapa says in the text, a lot of these things I can't describe to you really well until it happens to you. And until you meditate a lot, these don't mean a lot. It's like reading a Volkswagen car manual, how to fix it without ever looking at the car. You won't run into the problem until you try, and I can only describe it to you roughly. But on the other hand, if you try a lot, you will encounter these problems. So at least you know you've got some ammunition. But if you never went to this class, but if you tried to meditate a lot, you're aware of all these things already. You know, I mean, you just find that you forgot what you're doing. You lost the object completely. You know, it's like your mind was just—it slips away from you. This is where the object slips away from you. Not that you forget to sit down and meditate. It's that you are meditating and you stop meditating and you didn't realize it.
Or then your mind wanders.
Yes, it's like a wandering. But it's the stress here is not on the wandering, which comes later. It's that you're just not meditating anymore. The object has slipped away already.
So you're really in a meditating position.
Yeah, all of these take place during the meditation position.
Do you mean you're not meditating anymore, or now you're meditating on a different object?
It's not the stress in problem number two. The stress in problem number two is that you've lost the object.
So this is not coarse wandering then?
When you lose the object from your attentive state of mind, the second problem has occurred, and that it's given the name, which is a misnomer, right, for getting the instructions. And he says, the antidote. By the way, I couldn't translate this whole thing this weekend because I took the kids, the Mongolian kids, up on a retreat. So I'll try to do it tomorrow, Wednesday, and give it to you on Thursday. Okay? It's a lot to translate, but I like it a lot. I think you should have the whole thing. It's really nice. So he says, For example, if you are holding a rosary, because that's all that monks are holding all day long, right? In your hand, it's like holding a rosary in hand. If you have strong dhamma, then you can, with strong dhamma, you must keep your mind on the object. He says different people have different capacities of dhamma.
If this includes being distracted from an object by other thoughts, for example, I don't know how the antidote would work.
By the way,
no matter how familiar you are with the object of meditation.
No, if you're used to it, it comes up easily in your mind, more easily. You don't lose it as easily. Let me give you three characteristics since we're on it. He says, I mean, I didn't want to get into this much detail today, but I will since you're interested.
Three characteristics of what?
He's going to give you three qualities of dhamma. You don't need to know these. I wasn't going to talk about them, but since you asked, the first one is the quality of the object. He says you're fixing, it's fixing your mind on an object which you have experienced before and you're very accustomed to. He says, secondly, there's a quality of how it holds its object. A quality of how it holds its object. We're talking about memory now, right? Remembering. It says, it's a natural not forgetting of the object. It comes up in your mind very strongly. A natural not forgetting of the object, which comes up in your mind very strongly. And he says, for example, the way in which food comes to your mind when you get real hungry. how it just, hangyama means how it just pops into your mind very naturally when you're hungry. I had it this at noon today, and a cheese sandwich, you know, came into my mind very clearly around 11:30. It was an hour and a half too early, and I was going around looking for menus, you know. But that's, I was hungry, and it just comes into your mind naturally and very clearly. So that's the how it holds its object. The third quality is its function. It functions not to allow your mind to wander to another object. It functions not to allow your mind to wander to another object. Which again, it's really going to come in the next one more clearly.
What do you do when you can entertain two objects at once?
Nobody can. Tibetans say,
but you can have an image.
They're alternating.
Thoughts of
they're alternating.
French fries or
something. Yeah, no, they're alternating. The Majjhimika Avatara, the main text by Chandrakirti on emptiness, describes that process. And it says, it's a beautiful image. You take rose petals and you glue them on a target, like a couple of inches coming out of the target, like an inch or two. And he says, when you shoot an arrow into that pile of rose petals, it's like a bullet going through a book. Have you ever seen that movie? He says it looks like fwah, and they went through all the rose petals at once. But what's really happening is, you know, you can't see it with your eye, but mentally you understand it must be penetrating the first rose petal first, and then the next rose petal, and then the next rose petal, and then the next rose petal. So he says when you get this illusion that you're keeping your mind on French fries and the Buddha's I would say right now, work on the homework and don't pick a separate object. Work on those. Otherwise, you got how many objects? Two, right? Mm. If you know Rinpoche pretty well, he's always, through the years, he's 20 years he's taught. In fact, we were talking with Brenda about tonight. I mean, she used to work for the man who brought him here, who paid for him to come here. And for 20 years, he sat in that house. He didn't go out much, and he didn't change the his policy about all this stuff was, look, you go home and do it, okay? We didn't have group meditations, and we didn't, you know, it was all, that's your problem. I'll teach you how to do it, you know, and then that's the end of my, that's all I can do, you know. Really, you have to go do it yourself, you know. So this is number what, three?
Yes.
These things again, they don't have good words in English. Chingwa.
Chingwa.
Gupa.
Chingwa.
Chingwa means it's very hard to translate. You can say dullness. I'm saying dullness, mental dullness, in your translation. That's what you'll see. There are many, many words that people use. I don't know what's the best one. To me, it feels like mental dullness when I get it. Okay. Gupa is the opposite. Gupa is when your mind is. The word for.
There are not enough words there.
Well, gu. Okay, I'll say gu. Okay. Gu means. Actually, the literal meaning is wild. Like a mirgu. Mirgu, it means a gorilla. It literally means wild man. Okay. But gupa means. I don't know what to say. Excited or stirred up?
Agitated
is great. Agitated is pretty good. Excuse me?
We're talking about...
Gu.
Ching gu?
Yeah.
Just
the gu part means agitated. The ching part means dull. Dullness. They are opposites.
How do you spell it?
In English? In Roman?
What do you mean the dull?
She doesn't
dull. Oh, no, you help her. I'll spell it.
Dull.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Chingu. Now I'm going to read from Tsongkhapa. Gupa is pretty easy. Chingwa you have to study. Chingwa is the most dangerous enemy in meditation, period, of all. Okay? And I'll just read it to you. Chingwa la chalang nile, which means Chingwa has two forms. One is the obvious form, and one is the subtle form. So you can get ching, which is the full word is called chingwa, okay? Ching. You can get this dullness either in a very either the mind is too slowed down or the mind is too speeded up, okay? And we're talking about the first part, the ching part, where the mind is dull. And it's a very, very nasty, this is the worst enemy of meditation that there is, because the mind is fixed on the object and then you buzz out and it's very unclear. So what happens? You think you're doing great.
It feels awful.
Yeah, you don't feel refreshed when you get up. You just feel kind of stupid. You know? But anyway, it's like you did not lose the object. You have necha, you have fixation on the object, but it's not clear. Actually, your mind is not clear. Yeah.
Do you mean to distinguish? Do you mean number three is the worst enemy, or the first part of number three?
First part of the number three. Okay. If you want to say 3.1 and 3.2, I'm talking about this. Okay. I'm talking about ching, which we call ching's form. Now, what about the subtle form? He says.
Lady, can you put your head down?
Oh, good pronunciation. Okay.
Got it?
Yes, thanks.
Intensity. Say, Narmet.
Narmet.
You can also call it string. Nar is a very, very unusual word in Tibetan, and it means the quality that a steel knife gets when you. What's that process?
Temper
it. Yeah. After you temper a steel knife, it gets gnar. And I don't know how you're going to translate that. It's not sharp.
It's true to the blade. That's what temper.
It's what called?
What?
Temper. Tempered steel.
It's hard and flexible.
Hardened steel. Like they do it to sledgehammers and they do it to hammers. And there's some process, I don't know exactly what it is, holding a cup in your hand firmly. Or holding it, you know, when you kind of let go a little bit on the round part, and it spills. You know, like the cup didn't fall out of your hand. You still have the cup. You have clarity, and you have fixation, but there's no strength. There's no firmness to it. And he compares it to that. There's no.
Like losing your grip.
Yeah, he says that. Like he uses the same word. He says you're about to lose it. You're about to drop it. So that means it's loose, shaky. Okay, and he says the big danger is that you can continue this kind of dullness for many hours. You know, and you can think that you're doing a good meditation. And again, he says, I can't describe it to you very easily until you try it. But I'm afraid if you examine yourself well, I can tell you that I have this most of the time when I meditate. I've been doing it 20 years. I can stay on my butt for a long time, hours. And I can not move, and I can keep my mind on the object for a long time. But there's some kind of, he calls it water running under the ice. You know, there's something going on under where all these other shaky thoughts are always there, but it's just about to happen, you know. I'm just about to lose it. And I've got no clear. I can keep my mind on it, and it's just buzzing out. It's basically feeling good, feeling like I'm meditating. I do not lose the object. I wander, but I don't lose, you know, I still, generally the object is there most of the time. And I can even have some clarity towards it, but it's dull. It's low level.
This seems more dangerous than Ching.
He says, this is Tsingwa.
Oh, I mean, but the obvious part.
This is Tsingwa Chamo. Okay? And it's very, very nasty. He says, Chamo.
But you don't know when it's happening.
You're good for getting an animal reborn.
Yeah, I mean, in a practical sense, like you said, you've been meditating for 20 years.
Yeah.
No, I don't mean it in the case of you, but sorry. Yeah. Given that we're, you know, all going to be practicing and experiencing this, are we, you know, pretty much spinning our wheels when we're just doing this kind of meditation, not really making
any
progress?
Yeah, I'll give you one. It says, Tsingwa Chamo La Gomdu Tuna. If you mistake Tsingwa Chamo for meditation, for true meditation, Jebu, the result is Suk Suk Meg Ki Gyu Tsam Duang Nim Dro.
Oh boy.
He says it won't even get you to a birth in the former formless realm. Remember we said that some meditations can?
Yeah.
Not only that, Sen Dio Yang Jeng E Chewa Dong, you will become forgetful in this life. And Shirab Misel Du Doa. Shirab Misel Du Doa means the powers of your intellect will start to diminish. It makes you stupid.
It makes you have courage brains.
It does make you courage. And so Kapa goes into a long section where he's trying to distinguish Gurpa, which is the long form of this word, Gurpa, from Toa. Toa means where your mind wanders off to another object. Toa means where your mind runs to any other object than what you're meditating on. The Tibetan?
Yeah.
But you don't have to know it in the other. You don't have to. You don't have to write that down. Choa is any wandering of your mind to another object while you're trying to meditate.
That's not adjective.
That's not Gurpa.
I'm going to explain to you the difference between Gurpa and Choa, but you have to understand Gurpa in terms of Choa, okay? Choa means any kind of wandering of your mind during meditation. And it can be to a virtuous object. Okay? Like, if you are supposed to be meditating on the Buddha's body, but your mind wanders to doing some charity for someone, that's Troa. It's a disturbance to your meditation. Okay, it's bad. It's a mistake. Another kind of Troa is where your mind wanders to someone you don't like. Okay, like you start to think of somebody at work that said something to you yesterday. That's another kind of Troa. A third kind of Troa would be if your mind wandered to some object that is desirable to you, desire object, some object that you desire. The example he gives is if you saw one of those Tibetan operas at noon, that's a TV for a Tibetan in the 15th century, okay? There would be these religious operas called Namtar. If you've ever seen one, I don't know, anybody ever seen one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They go on for like 5 hours. The Dalai Lama comes and sits in the tent. And you wander around. And the lady gets up and goes, ah! Just like a real opera, you know. And no one knows what's going on. You know, you can't hear the words. And, you know, but people wander around having a good time. And then he says, if at night, when you sit down to meditate, if that lady who was in the opera comes into your mind, that's toa, towards a desirable object, towards a pretty object. Some kind of object of the senses. Desire object. That last one is the only one which is good. So that's the difference between a general wandering of the mind and good. The big enemy is when, what does your mind wander to 90% of the time when you're meditating? Something you like.
Something bothers you. Bothering you.
Well, you're a special case. By the way, Papa says...
You may feel preoccupied by something.
No, if you had a fight at work in the last 3 days, I mean, that's what you're going to think about. Right. And I know that because it happened to me many times.
Why does it have to be just fights? What about if you're worried about something?
Something like that. But what I'm saying is that because wandering of your mind is so often, in the vast majority of cases, it's towards something you want, something you like. It doesn't mean, you know, you're going to go rob a bank. It means you start thinking about what's for breakfast. You start thinking about what you're going to do when you get up. That's all gopa, because its object is a desirable thing.
So it's troa toward a desirable object, as opposed to troa toward the jerk at work.
Or towards a virtuous object. That's the point.
But it doesn't matter. You don't want to wander towards any of them.
Yeah, he says, actually, you don't want any of them. And actually, your enemy is troa. But because 90% of the time, it's towards something you want, something you like. This is the most common human tendency, is to, when you're trying to meditate, you start thinking about something you like. And it doesn't, you know, it's not like, I really want pancakes this morning, you know, which is what usually comes in my mind. But it's like, you just start thinking about the next thing, you know, right? You just start thinking about the next thing you're going to do after that, or what's the big thing I have, you know, which account I have to work on today, and
so if I'm sitting in meditation and I'm getting troa toward a holy object or toward an object that I hate, I'm not suffering from number three.
You are.
But
number three is called, the name for number three is restricted to that being distracted towards a desirable object. But obviously, if you get distracted towards a virtuous object, or if you get distracted towards an object you hate, that's obviously fault number three, problem number three.
So any kind of distraction.
Yeah, but the word for the problem is dullness and... What was the other one?
Agitation.
Yeah, like that.
So that full form is G-U-P-A or G-U...
The full form... I'm trying to make those short so you can remember them easily. And that's what they do in Buddhism, in Tibetan Buddhism. It's actually Chingwa Gopa. So I'm going to give you an example. He says, if you want to know the difference between fixation, clarity, we're talking about this one now, right? If you want to know the difference between whether there's an or not, whether you have intensity or not, he says, it's where you're holding a cup or your rosary in your hand, and whether or not you're holding it with firmness or loosely. And he gives another example, which I like. He says,
Idam Rana Nanda Kamriyataya Ami
This is the end of Class 5.